Let's play some cards.
From Harrah's St. Louis Casino and Hotel, this is The Final Table, starring Team Poker Stars pro Dennis Phillips with Paul Harris. Brought to you by Poker Stars and the Poker Players Alliance.
Winner, winner, chicken dinner.
You got to.
Now, from the Harrah's St. Louis Poker Room, here are Dennis and Paul on 590 The Fan KFNS.
Jackpot.
Thank you, sir. May I have another?
On the second day of November, Election Day 2010, a day that might or might not tell us something about the future of online poker being regulated and licensed in this country. It is also the beginning of November 9 week out in Las Vegas, and we'll be talking to a guy who just barely missed being part of that historic group, the man who went out 10th place this year in the main event, Brandon Stephen, the bubble boy for 2010, will join us in a little while. Hello, I am Paul Harris, sitting at table 2 in the poker room at Harrah's St. Louis. My partner Dennis Phillips is already out in Las Vegas, where he's running around like crazy, but we'll be part of the November 9 festivities when the weekend rolls around. Hi, Dennis. How are you?
I'm doing well, Paul. How are you doing back there?
I'm doing just great. And since we're talking about the November 9, I want to go back 2 years to when you were the chip leader going into the first ever November 9 in the 2008 main event. We all know that you came in third in that historic event. I want you to tell us a little bit about what's happening for the guys in the November 9 in the days before they sit back down at the table this coming Saturday. What will they be doing this week? Are there obligations that they have to Harrah's and the World Series of Poker and their sponsors?
Oh, absolutely. It's a pretty hectic time is what it is. In fact, more so than you really would want. It's kind of a two-pronged thing. Number one, you don't want to just be sitting around and, you know, thinking and worrying and the rest of it. You want to keep occupied, but you don't want to be occupied so much that you can't actually prepare for it. It's kind of a fine, thin line there to do it. And we were pretty swamped in those few days before the main event started up again. We were filled in for a couple of days with our sponsors. They took us to a remote house. They shot all sorts of potential ads and promotions and whatever, because they were doing it on the assumption that any one of us could win, which is true, and they didn't know which one, so they ran all six of us. At that time, there were 3 people from Full Tilt and 6 from Poker Stars at the final table. They ran us through everything, and so each of us had won it. It was real interesting, to say the least. But they wanted to get that out of the way because they knew what kind of a media circus it was going to be after the thing started. And then there were obligations, obviously, with the World Series and with Harrah's and doing it there, the interviews, the massive amount of media that's out there, just a ton of different things going on. For a week ahead of time, we were out here almost a full week ahead of time, and for that entire week, every day, something was going on. It was a little mind-boggling, actually, and pretty much of a whirlwind, shall we say.
Now, you mentioned that in the year that you were in it, there were 6 Poker Stars patched players and 3 with Full Tilt patches on.
Correct.
And the next year, the World Series of Poker made a new rule that said only 3 players from each sponsor company can sit at the final table with the patches on. And in fact, the rule says if there are more than 3 players representing the same entity at the start of a televised final table, then if the players can't agree on who's going to wear the logos or not, they essentially draw a high card to figure out who's going to get to wear the logos, and then under no circumstances can players seated there add logos or patches or anything to their clothing after the beginning of that day's play. So this year there are 7 Full Tilt patched players and 2
right,
who are Jonathan Dumel and Jason Sentai, who are with Poker Stars. So Tilt has a problem. They've got to decide which of their 7 players is going to wear the patch, and does there have to be a strategy employed there about who you're going to choose if none of the other, you know, for instance, let's say Michael Mizrachi, the grinder. Let's say, I don't think it's going to happen, but let's say he's the first one to go out and he's wearing a patch. Can they then say to another poker or full tilt player, you're going to get to wear the patch now? It doesn't seem that way according to the rules here. What will they do?
Well, actually, I haven't read the rules or anything like that. I was verbally told that as a player is eliminated, you will be able to patch another person for that particular site. So if the grinder is eliminated, then they would be able to pick one of the other four people that did not have a patch on and place a patch on them.
Uh-huh.
So I think that's the way it's going to go. We will find out this weekend because obviously with seven of them on there, several are going to be eliminated, and unless it happens to be that the three that are patched are the last three that are there, then we're going to find out if they're able to patch another person. It causes a lot of problems with it, though. The online company, be it PokerStars, Full Tilt, whoever, will be the one deciding which ones wear the patches to start with. It won't be the players flipping a coin. And then you run into all sorts of things. If you have a person on TV but not wearing your patch, are you still obligated to compensate him for it? It's a lot of question marks there.
Because there are bonuses. There are bonuses from the online sites, right?
Absolutely. There's substantial bonuses for it. So is an online company obligated to pay the players even if they are not patched up? I don't know what's going to happen there.
And the question of who do you patch? Do you patch the short stacks at the beginning because you know that the big stacks are going to be there the longest time, or do you go for, you know, a grinder who is the biggest named pro at the table, as Phil Ivey was last year? You know, Michael Mizrachi is the guy who has been getting a lot of attention from the professional poker players community. Some of these other younger guys are pros, but certainly not up to grinder's level as of yet. Do you patch him? Do you patch the short stacks? Do you patch the big stacks? What do you do?
Well, it's a big question mark. I think what they will probably do is the two biggest stacks they have, second and third, and the grinder will be the three that are patched. I don't know that for sure. I guess we'll see when the cameras start rolling.
Yep.
That would be my guess as to who they would patch.
Okay.
For obvious reasons. They have the best chance to win the tournament and the most media exposure. You know when the grinder is involved in the hand there that probably ESPN or SM are going to be covering it because he, just like Ivy last year, every time he was involved in the hand, they were covering it.
Yep.
So if you're a company that has a patch and wants it visible for the TV audience, who else are you going to patch? You're obviously going to patch the person who's going to be on TV. Right now, those three would be the logical ones, in my opinion.
All right, last week I took part in a telephone conference call with World Series of Poker and Harrah's executives and some people from ESPN and the production company 441 Productions. So let me fill our audience in on what to expect this weekend. First of all, they will come down to the Rio and start play around noon Las Vegas time this Saturday. I say around noon because I remember, Dennis, when you were supposed to start, it took it seemed like it took forever from the time you guys actually sat in your chair to the time that we had shuffle up and deal and the cards actually hit the felt.
Well, not only that, but we had a couple of issues beforehand, one of which has never been made public, but it was an issue concerning a player, and we were late getting out there. The second issue, which again hasn't been made public, although I've mentioned it, is that we had one player who threw up twice before he made it out there to the table. So we were late getting there, and then you're absolutely right. After we got there, we sat and we sat and we sat. I don't know, what time did we actually start dealing cards? It was after one, I know.
I think it was at least an hour later.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it was quite a while.
So they're supposed to start around noon, figure noon-ish, Vegas time on Saturday, 2 o'clock here in St. Louis, and then they will play down from 9 until 2. Now, ESPN is offering a live stream of the final table in the United States. It will be on a 5-minute delay. You will not see the whole cards, and you will not get Lon McCarron and Norman Chad. I'll explain about that in just a second. But you will have a guy named James Hartigan, who has done this before, doing the play-by-play, and they'll bring in various pros. Last year, Phil Hellmuth came into the booth. I think Gavin Smith was there for a while, Annie Duke. A lot of other pros will be there doing analysis. So if you want to see a live stream of it and also hear an audio feed of what's going on, ESPN3, which is available online from ESPN.com. While that's going on, the ESPN production team and 441 Productions will be working like crazy in recording this thing. And it was interesting, they talked about on the conference call last week how they're going to have 10 edit suites set up because they're really editing this thing on the fly. As any good hand is completed, it is sent off with notes from the producers and edited in one of those suites and turned into the video of what will air. That means most of this production crew will work through Saturday and Sunday and into Monday. And, of course, after they've played down from 9 to 2 on Saturday, or maybe even into Sunday morning, the players will all get a day off on Sunday. The production crew will work like crazy. And then everybody will come back Monday night at 10 o'clock Vegas time to begin playing the heads-up battle, which could take 45 minutes. It could take 5 hours. They have no idea. So they're actually going to be producing the content that you will see Tuesday night in the ESPN Final Table telecast, which will start at 9 o'clock Central Time. That's a time change, by the way, if you're setting your TiVo or your DVR for it, 9 o'clock. And don't just set it for 2 hours, because last year it went a half hour over, and this year ESPN has given the production team extra time, whatever they need, to put this show on the air. You may want to set for a three-hour window there. They said in the production meeting, in the conference call last week, that they will be finishing voicing the heads-up portion of the show while the first hour is already on the air. In other words, Norman Chad and Lon McCarron will be doing the second hour, or the third, perhaps, hour of the show, adding the finishing touches to that as the rest of it has already begun to air on ESPN. Now, of course, by that point, they will know who has won it, and we, Dennis and I, will be doing our show live next Tuesday afternoon, and we are going to talk about what has happened, because Dennis, you're going to be there for at least the heads up portion of it Monday night, right?
Absolutely. I get to see the whole thing when these two guys go heads up, just like I saw Darvin and Joe last year when they did it. I was sitting in front row and center stage, and I will be there again. And it's such a nightmare for these guys. They try to set up a kind of a storyline and follow it, and they get involved, and they get these great hands. They have to pick among the best of the best, because there's a ton of good hands they could be doing. But anyhow, they get this all set up, and then the guy gets eliminated. So now they go back and say, well, now can we really devote that many hands to a person who ends up finishing seventh or right. eighth or sixth? So they got to go back, and they scrap a hand mess of those, and they start all over again.
Yep.
These production guys were going bald out there in front of me, I think, last year.
Pulling their
it
hair
up.
It was
amazing. Oh, my gosh. Yeah, it was like, oh, no. We started this whole thing out with Ivy, and now all of a sudden he's out already. And so now we're going to go because, and Joe Cotta was a short stack, so they weren't worried about him, and all of a sudden he starts doubling up, and they got to go back from the beginning and try to find hands that he was involved in. It's just, oh, yeah, they were just going literally nuts.
Yeah. Norman Chad says that the production crew is like an ER staff working 24/7 for 3 straight days. He said, as far as me and Lon, we just do what we normally do. We show up and we talk.
he's right about that.
Yeah.
And the other thing, now remember, this is the group that did the marathon session. This is the ones that, you know, refused to go out. They were, what, 6 hours there when they got down to 10-handed? Just back and forth and back and forth and nobody wanting to be eliminated.
And
more of the same scenario could happen here. They could be there for literally a record number of hours,
yep,
trying to play down to two.
And we will talk to Brandon Stephen about exactly that, since he's the guy who finally did go out. We'll talk to him about that in a mm-hmm. couple of minutes. One other thing I want to tell you from the conference call last week. They're going to have each player come in with their own walk-on music. So it's not going to be just the applause from the crowd. There's going to be walk-on music. There will be showgirls. There will be explosions. There will be confetti. Ty Stewart said, we're making this like a prize fight.
Okay, 2 o'clock before they do shuffle up and deal.
Anyway, we will have extensive coverage of it next week, and we're going to hold off on our predictions. I thought perhaps we could do some predictions on the show here today. But I want to bring Brandon in on that since he was there and he can handicap some of these guys for us. So we'll do that when he joins us in a few minutes. Let's talk about this being Election Day. Our show is sponsored in part by the Poker Players Alliance, and we talk about them at length, and we tell you that we're members, and we urge you to join by going to thepppa.org, thepppa.org, to fight for the rights of poker players, not just online players, but casino players, home game players, anybody who loves this game. That's what the Poker Players Alliance is about. And we have told you many, many times this year about legislative updates. This summer, Barney Frank got his bill through the House Financial Services Committee by a nearly 2-to-1 margin. Unfortunately, that's as far as it's gotten. There is a bill that's sitting in the Senate. There is a companion bill in the House Ways and Means Committee. Of course, all that has been on hold while the members of Congress went off to try to get elected or re-elected in their cases. And then there's going to be this lame duck session, and then there'll be the 2012 Congress. Talk a little bit about what the impact of Election Day might or might not be on regulation and licensing of poker in the United States, Dennis.
Well, first of all, I hope that everybody has voted or will vote. And the simplest way to do check to see how your representative, how the people you have in Washington are doing is go to the PPA.org. Right on that site there, they have a record of how every member of Congress has voted on poker-related issues. You can go on there and you can pull up your individual congressman and see where he stands on it and what grade the PPA has given him. They've given him everything from an A-plus down to a D and how they have supported that particular issue. Now, I'm not saying you need to vote totally upon the issue of the poker there, but if you have a question, if you have a two different candidates that you don't know about, you can find the information on this issue right there. It's in black and white, very easy to see, and I would encourage you to do that. Now, that being said, you have so many key elements going on here. These races, you have a race in Colorado between a guy by the name of Ken Buck and the Senator Bennett up there, the existing Senate, the one that who has been up there for the last 22 months. He is a co-sponsor of the bill. He is fighting for the PPA, and he's fighting with the poker players to make this available to everybody, to give us a level playing field, versus Ken Buck, who happens to be the attorney who thought it was a great idea that when the prosecution against a half a dozen guys that were playing a home game, a $10 home game, but when that prosecution didn't go the way they wanted, decided to take it up to the next level and up to the next level. For some reason, the idea of these guys losing $10 in a card game in their own house, a home game, is whatever. He figured that was worse than going against. Actually, the penalties up there are worse than if you had 6 DUIs potentially for these people.
Wow.
Yeah, you explain that to me.
I can't.
So I can't either. And this Ken Buck has also come up with some lustral statements such as, do you want your representative wearing high heels and things like that. So I don't know. He's had some interesting comments.
So,
but we won't get into that. There's an awful lot of things going on. There is a chance for this bill to actually get passed during the lame duck session, although granted it's a small chance. But if we have the right people in office, the people that actually like and appreciate the freedom that we are asking for, then we have a much better chance of getting it done. So I'm hoping that November 2nd will be a good day for the PPA and for the poker players around the country.
Now, if not, if Congress does take a turn with a lot of members who don't understand that freedom that you're talking about, the freedom to make decisions about your own money and your own recreation, does that mean that we've got to wait at least 2 years before legislation can get through there?
No, it doesn't, but there are other ways to attack it then. We may have to go on a state-by-state issue to do it. The bottom line is this. There is a tremendous amount of states and a tremendous amount of programs in the federal government that are lacking for money, that need this resource. This is a large chunk of money potentially here with a tax revenue from it. The people that are actually on there want to be regulated, they want to be governed, they want laws and regulations in place so that everybody knows this is a fair and equitable system. All those things make sense. At some stage, this is going to happen, hopefully less than the 2 years. In fact, I actually think it will be less than the 2 years. So there are ways to attack this to support the PPA. Maybe we end up going state by state instead of on the federal. Depending upon who is in there, I'm hoping that Representative Frank will still be in there, and he will still be championing the cause. He may have to take a deep breath and start over again.
All right. For more information on all this, go to theppa.org. That's the Poker Players Alliance. And keep listening to this Final Table show and podcast, because we'll certainly keep you updated as this is one of the major stories that we have been covering for, this is 92 weeks that we've been doing this show. And we've mentioned it in pretty much every one of those. Well, we're going to take a break here. When we come back, we'll introduce you to this year's bubble boy for the main event, Brandon Stephen, the Wichita car dealer, who... Well, most people would be happy with a $653,000 payday. I don't think he was happy when they told him, walk over here and get your check. But we'll talk about how he looks at that in the rearview mirror now. And on this November 9 week, we've got lots to get into with him, including an analysis of the nine guys who did get there. And we'll be playing it out this weekend in Las Vegas. Don't forget to go to our website, which is thechipleader.com. You can get our Final Table merchandise. You can also follow us on Twitter as Dennis_Phillips or Paul Harris Show. Those are the two ways to follow us on Twitter. This is the Final Table Radio Show every Tuesday at 3 on 590 The Fan, KFNS, and KFNS.com. This is the Final Table Poker Radio Show, live from Harrah's, St. Louis. I'm Paul Harris, sitting in the poker room at Harrah's, while my partner Dennis Phillips is in Las Vegas, where the November 9 will sit down to play for the chance at $9 million at the Rio this weekend. A few weeks ago, I was finished with the show and went to play in a cash game here in St. Louis, and sitting at a table with mostly people from St. Louis and one guy at the end of the other end of the table who I didn't recognize. And people were talking, and the ESPN Tuesday night coverage was on the TV in the poker room. And somebody turned to this stranger from out of town and said, "Hey, that guy looks just like you." And the stranger said, "Well, that's because that is me." His name is Brandon Stephen, and he was in the main event and had a heck of a deep run. In fact, made it to 10th place, which means he was this year's November 9 bubble boy. Brandon, since then, has had another deep run in a major event. In fact, that's what kept him from being on the show with us a couple of weeks ago. He was still playing in the main event of the Festa al Lago at Bellagio, where he finished 9th out of 335 players. He owns 4 car dealerships in Wichita and 7 health clubs and other businesses with his brothers. And it's nice to see a Midwesterner following in the footsteps of Dennis and others in having great deep runs and finding a way to make some money in the poker world. Brandon, welcome to the Final Table.
Thank you.
Nice to have you on here. Are you over it?
No, not even close.
For our listeners, of course, tonight will be the night when they will see you go out in 10th place. We want to talk to you about something that we've talked with some of the other November Niners about, and that is the play when you got down to 10, that bubble play, which last year only lasted about 45 minutes, but this year it took nearly 5 hours before you went out in a hand where you had ace-king and Matt Jarvis had a pair of queens. You were kind of short-stacked, so all the money was going in there. Tell us about the bubble play, if you would.
Well, it was crazy. It wasn't much poker. It was poker by 3 players, you know, the 3 people, which fortunately for me were right to my right, you know, DeMille and Chung and Dolan. They had all the chips, and they were just raising every pot. I don't know if they were, I don't even think they were looking at their cards. They were just raising because it was a bold fest. It was crazy. And I wasn't playing like that at all the entire tournament. I was playing, you know, playing normal poker, but gosh, when you get down to that final 10, you start to realize, wow, I don't know, I need to make the November 9. Each day I wasn't really focused on getting to November 9. I was just playing poker, trying to get through the day. But, man, when you get down to that 10, as Dennis will tell you, it gets pretty wild in that room.
Well, there's so much difference between a 9th and a 10th place, and I think people have finally realized that maybe they weren't quite as aware of it in the first year or two of this event. But it's a huge difference. And but then, also, you've got 10 pretty solid players at the table, you have to imagine. So there's nobody going to be making, you know, the rookie mistakes or anything like that. The year before, if you remember, it was pretty much a no-brainer. Justin Smith ended up with pocket aces, and Darvin flopped a set, and, you know, the rest is history, as they say. So, you know, he got his aces cracked, and that's how come it ended so quickly. 6 hours. There had to be times in there when you were forced to lay down a hand, even though you were fairly sure you had the best hand, or something going on like that during that 6 hours. Were there any particular hands that kind of stand out in your mind that you didn't want to go up against the big stack, or
I tell you,
something that way?
I tell you, I picked a bad time to go card dead.
Oh.
Those 6 hours was literally a card dead fest for me, and it was so funny because I remember one time I looked down, I got pocket kings. I'm like, oh, finally I get a hand I'm going, you know, to shove with, and I swear to you, I was on the button, and it folded all the way around to me. I mean, these three guys to my right didn't raise once. They did not raise once, and the one time they chose not to raise, I got kings, and I make a mem raise, I think, and a grinder fold, and Jarvis folded. I'm like, you've got to be kidding me. But here's one time, Dennis, when I had ace-jack or ace-queen, I don't remember, one of the two I guess we're probably going to see tonight, when I went ahead and called the raise flop, or I think it was ace-jack. I called the flop, and I missed it, and I guess in a normal situation, Dennis, I probably would have just opened, you know, stopped and go and opened and shoved there.
Yeah.
But I just didn't there because of the situation. So that's probably only one situation that refers back to what you're mentioning.
When you and I were talking a few weeks ago here in St. Louis, Brandon, you told me that you were still upset about a bad bluff you made that lost you a couple million chips. What was that hand?
That was, I guess, what Dennis just said about an amateur mistake. I had ace king of hearts, and I was in the early position. I raised, and Soy Wynn, you know, he called, and he obviously had a pocket pair. I mean, and I didn't continuation bet. It was down to, I think, 14, 15 of us left. And I should have just, you know, if I just sent out a continuation bet in the flop, I would win the pot. And it was check on the flop, check on the turn. And the river, I come out with $1.2 million or $1.5 million or $1.7 million bet, which is just a horrible bet. It was just something that I normally would never do. And of course, he called with pocket fours. Just, I would have called. It was just a horrible call. I should have bet. You know, if I would have just bet a lot in the flop, bet the turn, and he's gone. You know, pocket fours there.
Mm.
And that was a $4.5 million pot, which, you know, I got our stacks was just going up and down so much. You know, I went to the final 10, and I only had like 2 million chips. Then I got up to 9 million. You know, then you look down 30 minutes later, and you're at 5 million. It's just, it was $1,250,000 around when we left. And that's crazy. Those blinds got so high.
But the M thing, exactly, you do it by rounds by the time you figure in all the antes and such. At a million and a quarter a round, yeah, how do you just sit there? You were down to, I think, 4 million when you shoved, and the guy you shoved against didn't have much more than you. So it was pretty much a no-brainer at that time. He was not going to lay down queens. You're not laying down ace-king. I guarantee I'd add my chips in there, too.
Yeah, the decision was, there was no decision. You know, DeMille raised $1.3 million, I think, under the gun. I looked down at ace king. I just, you know, it's the shove. There was no decision there. He could have folded. There's no way I would have with queens, especially as carded as I was. And he said, I saw him at the Bellagio deal, and he told me, Jarvis told me that Soy said he had pocket queens that same hand, and he obviously laid them down after
wow.
Matt, you know, went all in as well.
Mm.
Yeah, but I did need to hear that.
Yeah. Brandon, I want to ask you about a hand that we saw on last week's ESPN coverage, and with a hand that maybe you were waiting to see on TV.
Yes, the aces of the kings.
Yeah, it was a hand where you played against John Raisner. This, of course, was on day eight. You three-bet pre-flop from the hijack position, and he just called, and we ended up with a pot of about $1.85 million. The flop came ace, eight, four. You had pocket kings. And it went check, check. The turn was a jack. He bet about 700,000, and you called. The river came in eight. He bet 1.9 million, and you went into the tank. And at one point, you asked him, "Did you turn a jack?" And Raisner didn't say a word. You actually said to the grinder across the table, who's a friend of Raisner's, "You said you got a coin because this is a coin flip situation for me." and I don't know who it was who brought the coin out of the stands.
His wife.
Oh, Grinder's wife brought the coin out, and I get maybe he refused to flip it or whatever it was. Can you walk us through there? And by the way, you made a huge lay down there with a pair of pocket kings, which I don't think a lot of people would have done there. And, of course, you had to wait until you saw it on TV, I guess, to find out that it was aces you were up against and that Reisner had flopped a set. But walk us through that hand, if you would, about how you felt when he just called your three bet, what you put him on, et cetera, all the way through.
Okay. That is the only hand of the entire tournament that I was just dying to see because it was a big laydown. And it was a crucial time, and I just won a pot. So I just got my chips up to like 7, 8 million, which is the biggest I've had the whole tournament. So it was a crucial timing for me. And it was probably the only pot that, well, not really, but it was a big pot. Anyways, I did three bet him pre, and he flat called me. Now, there's a little more information that the viewers don't get to see on TV is Rachel and I have been playing together a lot, and he was flat owning me this entire tournament. He was three-betting me. He was re-raising me in the flop. He was pushing me off every pot in the world. So when he three-bets me pre, I know he's super strong.
Mm-hmm.
If he's, because the whole tournament he's been shoving me around, and I just didn't have the hand to take a stance against him. In this situation, when he three-bet me, I said, oh, gosh. I said, he's strong. I said, the worst hand I put him on are queens and jacks. I said, he's got ace-king or aces. Worst-case scenario, queens or jacks. So the jack saved me in the turn. When I called the turn, you know, I told him that I had a big hand, and I was calling the turn to see if he'd give up the river. At no point, I think I was calling. I was just trying to get more information before I folded. Now in retrospect, to see it, and if he knows what I had, he played a bad pre. He could have got a lot more money out of me pre-flop.
You think if he had 4-bet or 5-bet or whatever, I can't remember at what point we were at there, but if he had come back over the top of pre-flop with your kings, you would have played a big hand with him?
I would have called. I wouldn't have, you know, if he would have shoved all in against me, I don't know if I would have called, but if he would have 4-bet me, I would have called. You know, he probably would have 4-bet me another million, and I would have flatted, you know, I would have called. I wouldn't have raised there. Then the ace would have saved me money. If the ace doesn't come and it comes 6-7-8 or something like that, I don't know what happens. I don't know if I can get away from it or not. I have before, and there's been several times in tournaments where I have been able to get away from kings, pre and post. But that ace, you know, he played it bad. You know, if he knows if he the ace killed him, he knows that ace killed him. So that ace cost him a lot of money.
Yeah.
But that's part of the problem. Anytime you have pocket kings and an ace comes on the flop, either
it's
number
horrible.
One, it kills your action because you're worried about it. Number two, you're beat. And if he has some monster hand himself like that set, well, yeah, it kills his action. It's just an ace on the flop. It can be so bad so many times.
Yeah,
unless it's a multi-way pot, you don't want to. If you got aces versus kings, if it's a heads-up deal, you just don't want to see an ace.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Dennis, he's out of position against me. You know, that was a bad flat call. He should have four-betted there.
Yes. Yeah, I agree with you. In hindsight, he probably agrees. But to give, just like you were coming about how you think you misplayed a hand, you guys were there for how long that day?
18 hours 16
or
hours.
Like that?
Yeah, 16 hours.
Okay. 16 hours?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, in 16 hours, you're entitled to make a bad play here or there. You're human. So don't worry about that. Plus the fact that I don't know how many of our viewers have actually played 16 hours in a row. It isn't easy, guys. I've done it a number of times. It isn't easy, and it's very, very easy to get lackadaisical or to slip and make a misplay or, you know, it's so easy to do. So don't knock yourself with that. If you only made the one play that you're questioning, you did a hell of a job out there.
See,
friend.
I don't think, Brandon, that you made a bad play there. I think you made a great play.
No, you're
laying down the kings.
Oh, the kings. We're talking about the ace-king of hearts when I bluffed it off.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. It was a good bluff. It was two streets late.
All right, we're going to take a break, and then we're going to come back and talk with Brandon Stephen, find out about a big tournament that he's got going on for charity this weekend, and we'll also ask him to help us analyze the nine guys who are going to play it out this weekend at the Rio for that $9 million top prize. This is the Final Table, brought to you by PokerStars.net. That's the online poker site where you can play against big-time pros like Dennis Phillips. Talk a little about what PokerStars has coming up, Dennis.
Oh, it's unbelievable. Their current promotions just reads like a fantasy. They've still got their dream job going on. where you can play absolutely free for a year. You get a contract with PokerStars. It's worth up to $42,000, and you playing in Europe and here and there and whatever. They've got the PCA Fantasy now, where you can go down to the Bahamas, play at the Atlantis, stay in one of the best resorts in the world for a week, and play against, again, a tournament. The last year first prize was 2.2. It's just unbelievable. They've got their poker leagues now, where their nightly free rolls. Go on the PokerStars.net and sign up for that. It's $500 free rolls on every night there. They've got tournaments in Australia and in New Zealand. And, of course, don't forget, they got the NAPT here in the U.S., and they've got the $1 Million Challenge that you can qualify and play there with Daniel. And at least we not forget at the big game, the time when you can become the guy that sits down with five of the pros and plays for a chance to win, well, into six figures. So I'm telling you what, go to PokerStars.net, download the information, learn the game, improve your game, and start going anywhere in the world to play poker because it's there and available for you.
PokerStars.net, where you can find the poker star in you. This is The Final Table, live every Tuesday at 3 on 590 The Fan, KFNS and KFNS.com, and our podcast available through iTunes and Dennis's website, thechipleader.com. This is The Final Table Poker Radio Show. I'm Paul Harris in the Harris St. Louis Poker Room. Proud to have them as a sponsor. My partner Dennis Phillips is live in Las Vegas, and our guest Brandon Stephen is in Wichita, Kansas, where he owns four car dealerships. He's got a Toyota store, a Ford store, a Suzuki store, a Subaru store. He's also got a bunch of other businesses there. He is the bubble boy for this year's World Series of Poker main event, November 9, which means he came in 10th and took down over $600K. Also had a great month this month, coming in 9th at the Festa al Lago at Bellagio. Played in the 10K Regional Championship last weekend at the Horseshoe Hammond just outside of Chicago. And this weekend, Brandon, you've got a charity tournament that I know Dennis is going to be playing in. And I know you've done a lot of stuff for charity in your town. Tell us about this one.
This is our fifth annual. It's going to be a lot of fun. I'm expecting the biggest turnout we've ever had. It's just a poker tournament. It's not just a poker tournament, I guess. We actually have general admission for, you know, the spouses or people that don't play or the guys that don't play, too. So it's a big party as well. We have a DJ there, and there's about 9 or 10 different live auctions and silent auctions, and it's for kids. And when I did this 5 years ago, I did it for the Leukemia Lymphoma Society, and I did it for the first few years for the Leukemia Lymphoma Society, and actually, and through 2 or 3 years ago, I was a Man of the Year candidate, and I actually won the National Man of the Year contest because of the tournament. It was such a success. But we changed it up a couple years ago, and we're keeping the money local now and helping for an organization called GIFT, G-F-F-T, which is just for kids locally that are not, you know, to get them off the streets, get them into sports, get them into fitness, give them activities, you know, give them the uniforms. And last year, we had a young man that we sent to the Olympics, you know, didn't have the money, and it's a great deal. It's cool. And what I like about it is it keeps the money local to help kids here.
Is there a website or any place where people who might want to attend this weekend could get information?
You bet. Of course there is. You can actually register online at acesforkids.com, or it's the easiest to go to brandonstephenmotors.com, and there's a huge link on my website to get right on there.
All right.
We got Dennis coming. I'm hoping I get heads up with Dennis, is what I'm hoping.
Well, I'm hoping I don't get heads up with you. Good grief. Yeah. Why do we want to do that? I'll tell you what. You and me and Kata heads up, or three-way at the final table. How's that?
That's fine. Paul, who do you have your money on
that one?
Well, I know who'll be doing the most talking at that final table, Brandon. You.
Why you say that?
Because I played in a cash game with you a month ago, and you were a very talkative guy at the table, and I know we've only seen a little bit of it on the ESPN coverage, but I know from live play that you like to get reads on people at the table by talking to them. You're not saying anything obnoxious in any way, but you're asking questions and you're talking to them, and I think that's a vital part of your game, isn't it?
It's my only part of my game that's any good, I guess. It is sick. I'm sitting in a tournament the other day. We were at the WPT, and I was the kid that won, Randall, at one. We're in a hand with him, and I raised preflop, and he called. The flop comes something, and there was a 7 and a 9 out there, and I said, I just know for sure you got the 7-9 of spades. And he wouldn't show his cards to save his life, and I kept on saying that, and this had about 3-4 minutes. The camera's right there, and he turns over 7-9 of spades when I folded.
Wow.
Everyone's like, why would you have picked spades? I said, I don't know. It just came to me.
And trying to get some information. Anything you can get at the table that will help you, you got to do, right?
Yeah, but the tournament, back to the tournament. Sorry. Yeah, Joe Catt is coming. Victor Ramden's going to come in, too. A couple other guys. Patrick, who I think went out like 19th in the tournament. We made friends this year at the World Series. He's going to come in. I got a pro coming in from Dallas. So we got, these are all friends of mine, and it's just going to be a really, really good time. Our goal is to raise $125,000 for the charity, which would be the largest donation this charity has ever received. And I think we can do it. I think we're going to have 400 poker players here. That's our goal.
Wow. I wish I could be there. I'm sorry I can't. I've got some family obligations myself, but I know Dennis is going to be there. And then afterwards, Dennis, are you going to take him out to Vegas to watch the heads-up play at the end of the November 9?
Well, I don't know that I'm taking him or he's taking me, but yes, we're heading out to Vegas.
All of us are going to go. Kata, Dennis, myself, my brother Rodney's going to go, and Victor's going to go, so we're all going to go down there. That's going to be scary, won't it? Us getting off the plane, wow.
Well, let's talk a little bit about here, since you played against all of these guys and got to know their play. Help us handicap this, and for our listeners who may not know the names of the November 9 and won't know it until ESPN's coverage airs tonight, a little spoiler alert here. We're going to tell you that Jonathan Duhamel comes out of this thing as the chip leader with almost 66 million in chips. Then John Dolan has 46 million. Joseph Chung has about 23 million. And the rest of the November 9 is made up by John Raisner and Matt Jarvis and Filippo Candio and Michael Mizrachi and Soy Wynn and Jason Sentai, who is the short stack there. Give us your feelings about these guys, how they got where they are, whether they deserve that place in where they are, and what you think will happen this weekend.
Well, you know for sure that I'm not going to say whether they didn't deserve that, right? You can't expect me to say that.
Well, if one of these guys put a beat on you that you don't think he should have been in the hand with and he got a lot of your chips, that way, this is now the time to say it, Brendan.
Well, Soy got his chips from a pot that I initiated when I had aces, and the camera didn't, you know, it was on an outer table, and the camera didn't see it. He had King Jack, and Theo had ace four clubs, and it was a huge, the biggest part of the tournament, and I had aces. I had no choice in to fold on the flop when I got five bet all in. So, well, not five bet all in, but five bet huge, and I just dumped my aces thinking for sure I'm in third place, and it comes out that I would have won that pot. So that's how Soy got his chips. Yeah, that was a heat, and his chips went down from there.
Wow.
Yeah, but I had aces, which the camera didn't see, but it was the right laydown, but it's easy to say that now.
Soy is the one who calls himself the complete amateur here, am I right?
Correct. Correct, that's what he calls himself, yes.
Well,
he plays good.
I got a question for you. Do you think he's going to be the first one out? Who do you think is going to be the first one out here? Who's going to play more aggressive and maybe get caught?
Well,
I can't see Soy doing it.
You can't see him going the first out?
Yeah.
Well, I'm sure, you know, I saw him at WPT, and he was out pretty quick, but I'm sure he's getting the right instructions after the fact. I would hope he is about, you know, situational and position, because, you know, he didn't understand all that, or he didn't at least at the time. And, you know, that's huge. And this table is different than the dynamics of any other table, because they're going black with a short round, with the clock, there's not very much time left on the clock, and it's still $1.3 million. And talent is not going to be as relevant in this situation as the chip count, but more importantly, is the position. All the chips are down there in seat 2, 3, and 4. And yep. Duhamel has the most chips with 55 million chips, but he is in the best position of all of them because he's at the end of the chips. And then there's the grinder with 17 million right after him. And so I think before you really ask who's the best player or who's going to win this deal, you got to look at their seating and in the position there.
Yeah.
Well, you still, you know, 2 or 3 rounds, and, you know, that's 5 million just gets added to your chip, and when you only got 15 million chips, that's huge. So on that side of the table, on the other side of the table, you got Raisner. You know, Raisner, he played so solid for 2 days. I just didn't see that guy mess up once. I mean, he really did. But, you know, then again, you got the grinder. So I think it's different this main event, this Finals 9, because of the chip stacks and how high the blinds are.
Dennis, talk for a little bit about being the chip leader and having the number 2 chip leader to your right. That's the situation you were in with Ivan Demidov, and Jonathan Duhamel's got that with John Dolan on his right.
Well, it's a little scary, no matter what. If you're trying to get when you don't really want to get into a hand with the other chip leader, the guy that can really cripple you, unless you have to with a hand. You're trying to eliminate it. Everybody looks at the different pay structure between 9th, 8th, 7th, 6th. There's a huge amount of difference coming in here in my year. This year, it isn't nearly as pronounced, but there still is a difference. Everybody wants to be one of those final three. So while the play may change a little after they went from 10 to 9, I still think the majority of the people, I think like Asoy, is going to sit back there and try to grind his way down and finish somewhere in the middle of the pack and be happy.
I don't know if that's possible, Dennis. I don't know if he knows if he can do that.
It may not happen that way. I don't know the guys, and I didn't play with them. But
now, Brandon, are you saying that because you don't think that Soy has the poker ability to do that, or because the blinds and antes are so large and his stack is short compared to them?
Well, he went all in day 7 when he had 8 million chips, and 8 million chips was probably the top 10 of the whole tournament left, you know, with King Jack with the King on board and a 5-bet. You know, that's just
wow.
That's crazy. That's not real. The reason why I say that he can't do that, Dennis, is because that's playing for big money there, and he has a big stack. And he said on camera, which he was dead right, he said, I just have to follow my gut. And so the reason why I don't think he'll be able to sit back is because he's going to follow his gut, which got him to where he's at, obviously. So his gut read is usually right. But if he feels like his ace-jack is good pre, I think he'll probably push with it. I don't see him laying that down.
Wow. How did he survive 6 hours at the to go from 10 to 9 then, if he was playing that way?
He was in pots. He wasn't sitting back. You're going to see tonight. He played some pots.
Okay. All right. Cool.
So I guess
I'm surprised at that.
So I guess the short stack we should be talking about possibly trying to hold on is Jason Sentai.
He's definitely, and he has some talent. But, you know, Joseph Chung, he's good. That kid, he can flat play. So I'm real excited to see what he does. I think he'll be in the top three for sure.
I also have to ask you about Filippo Candio, the overheated Italian.
because I didn't play with him once, so I only played with him when we merged the 10. That's the only time I played with him.
And what was that like? Was he loud and emotional at the table?
It's just the funniest thing. I don't know what Racer was doing, because I saw Racer. I told you I didn't see Racer mess up once. I saw him mess up once, and that was but it was 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning. We played all day, and I promise you, he didn't play one hand the entire 6 hours we're there. And then all of a sudden, Racer wakes up and raises with ace-king, and Felipe 3-bets and Racer 4-bets, and Felipe goes all in. Well, in 5 hours, the guy didn't play a hand. Anybody got a clue what he has there?
Yeah, let me guess. Deuces?
I don't want to spoil the show tonight, but you're going to see what he has. He called off. Racer called him off and doubled him up. So, and he was, you know, he was pretty short. There was four of us going from the bottom stack, and every round it changed. So, he's going to have a tough time too. But he's going to have a tough time. I think it's going to be a stack. It's going to be the big stacks. It's going to be the big stacks. It's going to run with this deal.
All right.
Well, it's interesting. I've been following some of the betting lines that's going on in Vegas. And you can bet on what country your winner's going to be from. And obviously with Italy there, it's 15-1 odds on it, and they can't even get any action at that. So I don't think anybody thinks he's going to end up winning this. But if you go to the first player to be eliminated, he's actually gone down. People are betting that he will be the first person eliminated. They say he's normally an aggressive player who totally changed his style for the final 6 hours there. But when he comes into these final nine, now that he's made them, he's going to regress back to his normal playing, and you're going to see the real Italian storm come out. I don't know. He's only an 8-1 now, and he was at one time an 11-1 to be the first person out of the tape at the final table.
Mm.
So I don't know.
Brandon, give us your thoughts on the grinder, Michael Mizrachi. You know, we've mentioned many, many times that it's been a long time, 9 years since a big-name professional poker player won the main event. Last year, Phil Ivey had a chance, but he was pretty short-stacked in seventh place when they got there. Here's Michael Mizrachi going in seventh place with $14.5 million. You played with him. Tell us what you think of him.
I played with him for years, so I've played against Grinder for years, and he is a good player. He gets lucky, and people say he gets lucky, but he puts himself in a position to get lucky when, you know, I won't gamble as much as he will to be in that situation. More like I play in cash, I guess, where he's in a lot more pots, but he's a good player. I hope he wins it. That's my. I mean, that's the only time. That's the only person I say that I hope wins. I do hope that he wins it. I think it'd be good for poker if he wins it. When we were down to like 6-7 hands, we got in the hand when I went all in against him when he 3-bet me on the flop, and I thought he had. I misread him. I thought he had a flush and a straight draw, and he didn't. And so, you know, he folded his ace when I had a better ace. I had aces up. But in the break, I told him what I had. I said, I was honest with him. I said, I really don't want you to go out. It's actually better for poker, and it'd be better for these whoever makes it in November 9 if he's in it because he's such a big name.
Yep.
And that was true. And so I still hold to that. I really want him to win. I think it'd be best for poker if a seasoned pro wins it.
Dennis, you agree?
Oh, I absolutely do. I played against him a number of times in a number of different tournaments. We've gone head-to-head a few times even. We've had some massive pots. I've got a lot of respect for his game. You're absolutely right. I think he's going to have a problem winning it for a couple of reasons. I think, first of all, they're going to play against him the same way they played against Ivy. Nobody wanted to give Ivy chips last year, and nobody's going to want to give the grinder any chips either. So even though he may make a nice, solid run, if I had to predict, I would predict him finishing like third or fourth.
That's a good prediction. I'd agree with that.
Yeah, I would prefer him to win. I agree. I would love for him to win this just because for poker it's in its purity.
All right, guys. I've only got 30 seconds left. Who do you think will win it? Not who do you want to win it, but who do you think will win it, Brandon?
Jonathan DeMille is going to be tough to beat just because he's got so many chips.
Okay.
And he's got position all of them, so that's my prediction.
Dennis?
I'd have to actually agree with that, and I think if it goes heads up, it might be him and Raisner to go heads up.
Him and Raisner?
Yeah.
I think it's going to be him and Joseph Chung heads up.
Okay.
All right. I'm going to take
that. I could see too.
Just to be different, I'm going to take John Dolan. Brandon,
right.
We
Dolan
really
can play. He's good too. I'll tell you what.
Yep, and he's number two in chips now. So, yeah. It'll all play out this weekend at the Rio. Brandon, we really appreciate your coming on and taking the time to do it. Congratulations on your success. I know you weren't happy going out 10th, but that and the Festa del Lago have given you a couple of great tournaments this year, and I hope it's the beginning of some big winnings for you in the future.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate being on the show.
That's Brandon Steven, car dealer from Wichita. If you're looking for a Toyota, Ford, Suzuki, or Subaru, he's your guy. BrandonStevenMotors.com is the website. I'm Paul Harris with Dennis Phillips in Las Vegas. Our show brought to you by our title sponsor, Harrah's St. Louis. Come down here and play in the 14 tournaments a week or the cash games that are going here 24/7, or come down to play some of the table games in the casino or eat at one of the 7 different restaurants they've got here, including the Eat Up Buffet. Harrah's St. Louis, the home of the final table, every Tuesday at 3 on 5 Night of the Fan, KFNS and KFNS.com, and our podcasts on thechipleader.com.